Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with David Erfley, founder and publisher of the Junior Miner Junkie. And Dave, it's always great getting you on the show to get your thoughts on the precious metals markets, on the mining stocks, and really the macroeconomic backdrop that we're faced with in these markets. I guess one of the things we were just discussing off mic was that despite the pullback and corrective move in gold, silver really hasn't pulled back nearly as much. And really the bright spot is the mining stocks really haven't pulled back nearly as much as gold did. You know, gold dropped by 150 bucks, but the miners have held their own. So let's maybe start there. What's your general take on the precious metal sector as a whole?
Yeah, it's very positive action today in the GDX and the GDXJ. You know, they basically went up for six consecutive weeks and became short-term overbought. And they're working off that short-term overbought situation by creating a consolidation symmetrical triangle here for the past 2 weeks. And today, well, yesterday you had a big downdraft in gold, and the miners, you know, the GDX, GDXJ printed a solid red candle and they closed on uptrend support. And then today you had that huge move down in gold below 1900, but the weakness in the miners was bought immediately. And now here both are sporting white candles and they're back above their downtrend line. So if you take a look at the charts here, they're creating this consolidation triangle, and this is all healthy action. And so basically the miners are saying there's really not much to worry about as far as gold and silver is concerned, because they're continuing to show relative strength.
Yeah, it's a big change from where we were just, let's say, 6 months ago, Dave, where we were seeing the metals prices start ratcheting higher, but the miners really weren't keeping up and they weren't following along. Now we've seen the metals pull back a little bit, but the miners have held on to their gains and have actually started trending the other direction, kind of sniffing out that maybe prices will be rebounding. So do you look at it as a situation where the miners are kind of leading the metals at this point, or do you still see it as we need the gold price and the silver price to ratchet higher to get any more interest in the mining stocks?
No, absolutely. The miners are doing what they usually do when major bottoms are in the process of forming. They lead the gold price. We usually have, you know, silver price leading gold and the miners leading the gold price. So silver and the miners kind of go hand in hand, and they're both leading now. I know the silver price tested 2450 this morning really quickly, and it's bounced right back up. So it's really positive bullish action here, especially when you consider the fact that the gold price ran up to 2078 and it came down about $180 off that high. And yet the miners pretty much yawned at that. You know, they're still consolidating at a higher level. That, you know, the GDX and GDXJ made 52-week highs last week after being short-term overbought. So I look at this as very positive action. And especially if you take a look at the higher risk juniors, they're starting to outperform now. I could use my portfolio as a bellwether, because my portfolio is full of juniors that are higher risk. You know, there's some growth oriented producers and developers and some early stage drill plays, but there's no mid-tier miners and no major miners in my portfolio. And yesterday, the GDXJ was down over 4%, and my portfolio was down only 2%. And today, like I said, you see solid white candles so far at midday here on the GDX and GDXJ back above their uptrend lines. So this is, like I said, this is very positive action. You know, the gold bull does everything in its power to try to shake you off. And if you pull back a little farther on the gold chart, you know, I wouldn't even be surprised to see gold test the breakout of the downtrend line from the all-time high at 2089 in August of 2020. Now, the original breakout of that downtrend line came on war news, and then the gold price rocketed $300 in 6 weeks on the back of geopolitical tensions and war news. So I wouldn't be surprised if it comes back to test that downtrend line, which is now at around 1835. So we could see a quick test down to 1835 also, but you need to watch the action of the miners to tell you whether to be concerned or not. If that takes place and the miners are bought again really quickly, or even don't even flinch that much on the move, that tells you that this sector is very bullish going forward. And as far as I'm concerned, I think the risk now is to the upside in the junior sector.
Well, that's a good point. And bull market action means the risk is to the upside. So even if gold was to come back down and test that downward sloping downtrend line from August of 2020 down to, let's say, that 1835 level, that was previously resistance and that would be support, which is also bull market action. So it sounds like in general, if you were talking to investors that maybe have partial cash positions here, or maybe they missed this whole move recently and they're just now looking at the sector, would you recommend waiting a little bit longer to see if that level is tested? Or would you look at scaling in multiple tranches a little bit here and a little bit lower? What would your advice be to people that are kind of watching this more from the sidelines and trying to figure out, you know, is this a new downtrend or where should I get involved or is there further to fall? You know, what would you say to those people, Dave?
Well, you do it on an individual stock basis. This morning, I added to a bunch of existing positions this morning, like 7 or 8 of them. On this weakness, I looked at it as a gift and I saw it happening this morning. I said to myself, well, I better buy these things that I want to get into more. These positions that I want to add to here because where the gold price went and the reaction of the miners early on this morning. So I would take it on a case by case basis as far as the stock is concerned, you know, have a price that you want to pay. You know, you could probably still use stink bids in a couple of these things, but my weakness is being bought really quickly now. And take a look at uptrend lines and take a look at stocks that if they become short-term overbought, you know, above their 70 RSI or getting close to that 70 RSI, you know, put in a lower bid where it's trading when it hit that RSI level. And, you know, it might get filled, and also take a look at volumes. You know, if you see a stock that has created an accumulative bottom and then it breaks out of that bottom with huge volume, that's a pretty good sign that bottom is in and you could just buy any weakness from there. Because a lot of these companies that I own and that I follow, they've created, you know, these accumulative bases along with the sector. And some of them are threatening to break out, and even a few of them have already broken out. So you just pretty much go by a stock-by-stock basis.
Well, that's good advice because it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of market anyways. And you brought up some interesting points there about using stink bids to position in or watching for, you know, a base to be built and then for it to break out of that as a confirmation that you'd want to start buying on, you know, maybe pullbacks in that particular issue. So maybe just speak a little bit more about how you build positions. I think a lot of investors struggle with this. Some people just plop a bunch of money in one or two stocks or maybe a couple stocks all at one time. And then they're basically stuck with the whims of the market after that because they've thrown all their eggs in one basket or in a few baskets all at once. How does Dave Erfley get positioned over time in your positions? And, you know, what do you look for? What are some of the, other than what we just mentioned, what are some of the things that you look for when you're building your positions in your portfolio?
Yeah, it's a process. You know, the first thing you have to do is get familiar with management. Get them on the phone, have a one-on-one meeting with them. You know, what are they looking to achieve? You know, what are the catalysts that are coming up? And then I study charts, you know, every day. And some companies I've watched for years before I've taken a position. So you familiarize yourself with that company's chart, familiarize yourself with the management and what their intentions are going forward. And then, you know, sometimes I go ahead and take a full position because I've watched the stock for so long. And I say to myself, you know, this is it. I don't see it going any lower than here, lower than this price. So I'll go ahead and take a full position. But usually I'll take a partial position and I'll add more to the position further on down the road.
And if you wouldn't mind sharing, roughly how many stocks are in your portfolio? I realize it probably fluctuates from time to time, but about how many stocks you hold as a basket? And then how would that break down just ballpark as far as the growth-oriented producers, the developers, and the exploration plays?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I don't like to have any more than 30 at one time, you know, because, you know, you have to follow these things very closely, keep up with management, and keeping up with more than 30 is difficult, and that's my full-time job. But right now, I hold positions in 25, and I have warrants in a handful of others. So basically, it's 30 right now if you factor in 5 of the companies that are just no-risk warrants right now. But as far as growth-oriented producers are concerned, I have four right now, and that's like a base of the portfolio. And that's about, I don't know, that's about 25% of the portfolio, I think, right around there. And then the rest of the 75%, the bulk of that is developer explorers. And there are just a small handful of the higher risk juniors right now, because, you know, as this base was being built for the past 6 months, you know, on companies that were very undervalued that already had proven up large resources and they were de-risking them, I didn't think it was very prudent to take a chance on earlier stage juniors when you could get juniors that are de-risking high margin projects that with multi-million ounces on sale. So I still do have exposure to earlier risk drill plays via warrants. And I have a couple of stocks that I've taken my original investment out, and they're pretty much free ride stocks right now. I'm playing on house money, even though they're higher risk juniors. So basically, a conservative investor inside of a very high risk, high reward sector. Because, you know, to be consistently successful in this sector, you really have to manage your risk.
Those are good insights, Dave, because it does help to have a diversified basket and to be across different subsectors and stages of miners, as well as, you know, looking at which companies are growing, which ones have the potential for the big hit, but maybe they're higher risk, but then counterbalancing that with some safer plays that have that production profile to backstop that. Now, just one last question. As the sector evolves, let's say gold breaks above the all-time high, it's above 2100 and blasting higher. Let's say silver blasts above 30 and it's blasting into the mid-30s. Would you then throttle down into a little bit more speculative plays or optionality plays at that point and get out of some of the larger producers? Or how would you play that kind of a breakout move?
Yeah, that's what I normally do. Once the breakout occurs and the up leg really gets going, you know, you start to have M&A come in pretty hot. You know, M&A starts to heat up. And if I'm fortunate to have a couple of my stocks taken over by a major, I will sell the position, bank the profits, and then use the investment capital to go down the food chain into some higher risk early stage explorers.
Well, I wish that for all of us. I hope that's the way things are developing. And I think that it is.
That's why we're here. That's why we're in this sector.
And I think this is great. Just sharing some of your ideas on how you manage your portfolio, how you're seeing the sector. Any final thoughts you'd like to leave investors with this week, just as we look forward to the month and the quarter ending on Thursday?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the junior sector, there's that's where the value is right now, you know, in the developer explorers. And there's still no need to chase yet. You know, I think this consolidation might last a little while. So, you know, meaning the next 2 weeks or maybe even the next month or so. You know, we got the quarterly close coming up here on Thursday, and there's a very good chance that gold makes an all-time high on a quarterly closing basis. If it closes above 1900 on a quarterly closing basis, that would be an all-time high. And it doesn't look like it's going to close above that number. I've been 1975 on a quarterly basis. So that means that the consolidation will probably continue a little while. So you have plenty of time to get into your favorite quality juniors. Just be, you know, do your due diligence and watch the charts, talk to the companies, and pick a price that you want to pay, and hopefully it hits it, and you'll get a good price.
Well, those are some good thoughts to kind of round out the interview here, Dave. And if people like getting Dave's thoughts on how he manages portfolios and want to find out about the kind of companies he has in his portfolio and his kind of over-the-shoulder service, definitely check out the link below at juniorminerjunkie.com. And Dave, always great talking with you. Let's see how things look after this quarter closes, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Look forward to it, Chad. Thanks a lot.